and my husband followed suit as soon as he picked her up, and then we waited. Now, but again, on the programming, I never hear about these. She is also a fetal alcohol syndrome baby, and she had drugs in her system. Her biological parents never held her. She was removed at birth. Her family, because of her medical needs, her family that is clear up in Kotzebue could not take her because she would die. We have had 5 or 6 ambulance rides.
Gail, thank you for calling in. This is really helpful. I appreciate you sharing your story. I'd like to go back to Stephanie Benally in Utah to respond here. And Stephanie, we hear Gail talk about foster children that have really high medical needs. This certainly creates a whole new challenge to what we're talking about today. What's your experience there in Utah with situations maybe similar to what Gail describes?
So again, we provide ongoing support for our foster families, and that includes, you know, additional training if that's needed to help care for the child. We also have what's called RESPA care too. So if the foster parent needs some self-care time, they would be able to place the child in another foster home for that short period of time. And so I feel like in our state that we do provide a lot of support for our foster parents, and then letting them know that there are resources available. And then we also connect them with other foster parents too, so they're a part of a community. And if there is a question or if there's support needed, they will reach out to one another. And so I feel like over the years it has improved, and I have had cases where there have been children that are medically fragile. And again, you know, training and support is given to those families.
All right, Stephanie, thank you. Sally Wilson in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, I'd like you to chime in as well with regard to kids who might have foster children who might have some medical issues. Do you come across that as well?
Yes, we do. And, you know, a lot of times we depend on those services that come through Medicaid to help us find people that can help these families and children with treatment or counseling. And so we will go that route. But also we have services within our own healthcare system that we can tap into as well. You know, it's a hard thing. Children come from hard places and difficult situations, and each case is unique, and we just have to tackle them as they come.
Mm-hmm. Sally, one more question before we bring Gaynell Realbird into the conversation. I had asked you earlier about Principal Chief Chuck Hoskin Jr. and First Lady January Hoskin helping to highlight these efforts. What's the message that you folks are using, and what sorts of are these outreach events or conferences?
We use a lot of different resources. You know, we have Cherokee communities that are established, and we'll go into those communities, set up information tables, oftentimes give talks in our group meetings. We use social media a great deal, which is where we get a lot of our feedback and inquiries to become homes. You know, always what we found is, of course, when it comes from our chief and our people see that this is important to him, people will tend to listen a little bit more. And so having his support and having his voice and, you know, truly knowing that he takes to heart our need for foster homes goes a very long way.
Thank you, Sally. Gaynell Realbird joins us now from Gary Owen, Montana. She's a board member for the Mountain Shadow Association. Gaynell, hello again, and thank you for coming on the show. And let's talk more about the Mountain Shadow Association. It started the Kala's Village Project. Tell us more about this program and how it fosters progress there for foster parenting there in the Crow Tribes system there for foster care.
Hello. Yes. Well, so the Mountain Shadow Association is a nonprofit or Native American organization that has developed a program called Kala's Village. There's a drop-in center and childcare facility there on the Crow Reservation in Lodgegrass, Montana.
Well, and tell us more. You were continuing.
Yeah, so one of the issues and why there was a strong response is because Montana has one of the highest foster care rates per capita, with sometimes approximately 2,000 children in the system at any given time. And Native American children make up 40% of placements, though they only represent 9% of the population. So currently it is a foster care crisis in Montana.
Now, we heard already from guests in Utah, in Oklahoma, Cherokee Nation. We've heard some callers coming in from Alaska. Gaynell, what can you tell us more about the specific challenges that the foster care system there, specifically with the Crow tribe, faces?
So the foster care system currently is overwhelmed. There aren't enough families to meet the need. So often children are placed outside of our communities. We are in rural southeastern Montana. And to meet this need, a grassroots group of people in Lodgegrass spent 9 months on a family-centered design process in the community. That group eventually formed, the Native Nonprofit Mountain Shadow Association. Mountain Shadow knew it would not be enough just to find placements for our current children on the reservation through the kinship process and foster care placement, but that we also needed to stop what was creating the need in the first place, high substance abuse rates, incarceration rates, etc. We needed to heal the whole family, so they took a different view of it and really became a trauma-informed, culturally centered response in creating the Kala Village's dream.
Gaynell, you mentioned substance abuse and incarceration rates as key factors that contribute to children needing to go into foster care. Give us some more details in terms of how you're working to address those issues and improve the outcomes so fewer children there on the Crow Reservation need foster care.
Yes. So, first of all, it's designed for healing. Families can stay connected, through a weekly visits, and children receive the nurturing and compassion care from trained aunties, uncles, and grandparents. There's economic empowerment. Parents return to the home at College Village and train for meaningful work and receive job placement support in construction, agriculture, and meaningful work, and receive job placement through construction, agriculture, culinary arts, childcare, and even indigenous hospitality. Through financial sustainability, the model supports itself through therapeutic services, like I said, the trauma-informed, peer support programs, agriculture, and childcare scholarships, ensuring that Kala's Village thrives. And the children that we take into care are drug-endangered children. That is the highest neglect factor for removal on the Crow Indian Reservation, and that is babies that are born to meth, sometimes meth, fentanyl, and heroin. And we do deal with, the same issues that the other ladies were speaking about in regards to, Medicaid, 4E, sometimes they can't transfer to 4E, 4B, is being utilized in some areas. And so now we found out that if a child has to go to, say, the Denver Children's Hospital, that they can actually get Medicaid in Colorado and in Montana. So we've been able to really utilize resources and just really try to tap into those types of funding sources for our children that have those high medical needs.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. We have time for one more caller. This is Auntie Evelyn in Albuquerque, New Mexico, who listens to the show on KUNM Radio. Hello, Auntie Evelyn. Good to have you calling in again.
Thank you, dear. Good morning, everyone. I'm
Evelyn, you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine, honey. It's okay. 2025, and we still have the same kinds of problems that we had in 1974 when our child welfare matters became nationally known. I'm hoping, I don't know what's going to befall the tribes and the tribal programs and especially off-reservation programs. It doesn't sound very good.
Okay.
I'm wondering what thinking that the programs are having about improving their services to maintain children within their homes. We still remove too many children. And we have such pure preparation for foster parents that we don't develop them within our own community. So many of our children are still having to go out away from their communities into substitute care.
All right. Auntie Evelyn, I'm sorry, we're kind of limited on time. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to have David Simmons with National Indian Child Welfare Association respond to your question. But David, this is interesting. We're hearing from Evelyn in Albuquerque saying maybe too many kids are going into foster care. Maybe the answer is to figure out how to keep kids at home, keep them with their parents. What's your thought there?
Well, Evelyn's exactly right. I mean, the answer to the foster care problem is not more foster care. So we can continue to, and we also appreciate the caregivers, the people that step forward, our relatives and others, but the answer is to reduce. And, you know, actually Indian country leads the way. There are increasing numbers of tribes every year who are decolonizing, you know, indigenizing their programs, and they're dropping their foster care rates anywhere from 20 to 70%. And which makes it much easier on the communities, right? Because then you're not out having to look for all these large numbers of foster care providers. And the way to do that is tribes are kind of going back and using their cultural traditions, their belief systems, and their healing, you know, ceremonies and things to heal families so that the kids can stay at home and don't have to be, you know, released to a foster home. And the same can be true in states too. We can help, tribes can help states realize how to work better with Native families so they can reduce the rate of kids that go into foster care too.
Thank you, David. And I want to go back to Gaynell Realbird for the final word here before we wrap up the show. And Gaynell, this all chimes with what you were talking about earlier, just, you know, going after these root causes that are putting children in foster care to begin with. Please add to the conversation before we wrap up.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, you know, it's just a work in progress with the project that we have. There's shelters all over the place, but keeping our children in an environment with their parents is something that we can create within our own system. And that healing process, keeping their culture, their language preservation alive, and maintaining that connection is what our goal is. And I am just excited, you know, to get moving forward and creating larger systems. But for right now, our initial project will include about 40 families. And so we're really excited. I mean, people in a sober living community that can help understand what their addictions are about, get healing. There's a spiritual component to it. We'll have a sweat. We'll have local clergy come whenever they're needed. And so, yeah, just keep on trucking.
All right, Gaynell, appreciate you joining the conversation. All of our guests today, David Simmons, Gaynell Realbird, Stephanie Benally, and Sally Wilson. Appreciate your time and your expertise. And listeners, please join us again tomorrow for a discussion about a new federal push to expand logging and how it impacts tribal forest management and economic development. I'm Sean Spruce. Hope you'll tune in.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com. Support by the American Indian College Fund. The American Indian College Fund provides millions of dollars of scholarships to thousands of Native students every year. Tribal citizens of every age and experience are eligible. The deadline for applications is May 31st, and you can find everything you need to apply at collegefund.org. That's collegefund.org or by phone at 800-766-FUND. Education is the answer.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite